lovely Aphrodite Jones. Yeah?
Yes. Thank you for having me.
This is Aphrodite Jones at the State of Florida versus George Zimmerman. Aphrodite, welcome to syndicatednews.net.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we were wondering by chance, at this moment, the judges just told O'Mara that he can't unring that bell if George Zimmerman claims that he has no knowledge of Stand Your Ground. However, that material was covered in his class, and now they have the professor here. What do you think will happen?
Well, it's interesting how much hair splitting is going on in this trial. I find it's painstaking when you are boiling things down to, you know, the minutia of the minutia of the minutia to try to keep things out of court, to try to keep things away from the jury, to try to keep... I almost find myself sitting here thinking, as I'm sitting in the trial, thinking, you know what, can't we all just say what really happened? You know, what people believe happened, what you think he knew, what he didn't know. He may have gotten hit 5 times on the head, maybe he didn't. And I think, by the way, the medical examiner was good at that. You know, she kind of said, well, it could have happened that way. Yes, it's possible, but it's not my opinion that it happened that way. You know what I mean? She kind of stood her ground, to coin the phrase. I wish there was more of that and in the courts today in America, rather than all this, you know, let's not include anything, because if we talk about a course that he took in criminology, then you have to talk about courses that he took in literature and you know, Chinese art and you know, Japanese dance and French, you know, whatever. No. This is about one thing. It's about the criminology classes that he took. It's about the fact that he had knowledge of Stand Your Ground law and the fact that he was trying to be a police officer. He applied to be a police officer. He applied to have a ride-along. He was a wannabe cop. Now, I know you can't come right out and say it like that in a court of law, but you're certainly, you know, we've come to a point in the American system where there's so much nitpicking. There's so much grasping at straws by the attorneys to slice this pie in 1,000 different ways so that by the time it's over with, no one can see the truth. And that's what you worry about in these cases, is what is the truth? What is the basic truth here? And is the jury going to be able to see through all of these, in essence, what I consider to be smoke and mirrors? And you cannot ring the bell that if George Zimmerman told Sean Hannity, no, I never heard of Stand Your Ground, you know what? Now they have a right to show that, yes, he did hear of Stand Your Ground and impeach him. If they would like to change that and put Zimmerman on the stand, then Zimmerman can unring his own bell and say, well, I was not in class that day, which is, you know, I don't know how well that's going to add up. But, you know, I guess there's a long-winded way to answer your question about just the way, the nature of how our justice system seems to be almost dysfunctional at this point because of all of this nitpick, how do you put it, behind-the-scenes, backdoor scratching and clawing at each minutia in order to keep a clear picture away from a jury.
And another thing that's come up in those old recordings that people don't want to look at that were recorded a year ago almost at this time, for instance, when there's a call that's made to George and he's answering, he's in jail, and he's laughing and mocking everyone with his friend on the phone as they talk about the fact that Sean Hannity has offered to pay for George's defense if Mr. O'Mara will accept Jose Baez as co-counsel. That's recorded, and it's very clear in the tapes that were released to the media by the Department of Law Enforcement and offered to us that we paid for through the office of the prosecutor, Angela Corey. And then we also have to accept that other problem, the discussions that were had back and forth where they laugh about the system and what a great man he has. Now, a lot of them are done in Spanish. Are they going to actually translate those tapes and air them? Because that shows a propensity of behavior. He has no respect for authority. What do you think?
I don't think they're going to be able to get those tapes in. Do you think they're getting those tapes in?
No, but I thought I'd mention it now.
Well, I'll tell you what. It should raise hell that, number one, Zimmerman is in... First of all, he sought out Sean Hannity. Let's not forget. It's unusual that a defendant will suddenly, out of the blue, decide to call upon a famous news anchor person and say, I want to talk exclusively to you. Fly to Florida and meet with me. That's bizarre to begin with. Who's done that? Can you think of anyone who's done it? Zimmerman called Fox News, requested Sean Hannity, got him on the phone, and said, I like you and your show, and I want to be on your show and talk exclusively to you.
Now, okay. those calls are on the tapes. Also, in the jail.
Well, Hannity was very thrilled about it, by the way. It's not about it being on tape. He talked about it. He was thrilled that he aired it. He talked about the fact that, you know, Zimmerman is a fan and he wants his story told and we have the exclusive and I'm going down there, and it was a big to-do. And he came to Florida and he did the interview and we saw it in court. Now, that said, what is Zimmerman trying to do? He's trying to play the media the way, let's say, a movie star would play the media, where a movie star would say, I'm going to talk only to you, Anderson Cooper, if you're Angelina Jolie. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm going to choose you if you're the President Obama, let's say, and you want to have your agenda or your perspective highlighted in the best possible way. Okay? And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying it's something people do if they're the President of the United States, if they're a movie star, if they're a criminal defendant, which is George Zimmerman, you know, I don't know that you get to pick and choose who you get to talk to when you haven't been prosecuted yet. He did, and not only did he do that by reaching out, but he picked a very conservative network that we all know is conservative-leaning and far-right, and Hannity is certainly far-right and was going to be, shall we say, favorable to Zimmerman in his questioning, in his demeanor. You know, this was going to all be pre-arranged and agreed upon before they ever had that sit-down, in my opinion. In other words, Sean Hannity wasn't coming down here and saying, I'm going to ask you every hard question. And I don't say that he did a bad interview or that he didn't. It wasn't a softball interview. He did ask the pertinent questions about stand your ground and whatever. But the bottom line is, Zimmerman was trying to control the media from jump. He wanted to make sure that he was going to get his story told his way. Well, now it's coming back to bite him in the butt. Because now he said things that's come into court that was on Fox News that shows he was lying.
Like the fact that he knew nothing about stand your ground law is a perfect example.
Big example. Because stand your ground law is what allowed him to think that I can be the wannabe cop that I want to be, because I have the ability to stand my ground so I can protect this whole neighborhood, and if anything happens and somebody pulls a gun out, I've got my gun and my license to carry permit, I can pull it out and shoot him dead, and I've stood my ground. Now, you think this man didn't put all that together, and you can't put those boxes together when you are doing tic-tac-toe on George Zimmerman?
I was wondering, now that all of these things are coming out that were recorded last year, I was wondering about the statements that he made concerning not just education, but the fact that he would be a hero and that he would be a great man. He discussed this with Shelley. One of the questions, for instance, that I asked his brother was, first, we had agreed that he was going to stop tweeting during the trial, and he said, no, I never discussed that, and I never agreed to it. Well, actually, I have an email that says the exact opposite. He did agree that he would stop it, and he wouldn't say it to me. He went and said it on Fox the very next morning, but that they were going to make him into a hero, and he was going to be a man that they could both be proud of, and
because he was going to be saving the neighborhood, and he was going to be the, you know, pseudo vigilante, whatever you want to call him, and he was
the savior.
You know, here's the thing: is I came down here with a very definite opinion about George Zimmerman as being a vigilante, a wannabe cop, somebody who did the wrong thing, absolutely did the wrong thing, by not listening to the police in the first place and not staying in his car. Period. The end. Stay in your car. Talk about stand your ground. No. Stay in your car. Okay? If all he did was stay in his car, we wouldn't be sitting here today. Trayvon would be alive, and that would have been the end of the story. But here's the rest of that story. Is Zimmerman was an accident waiting to happen. He was an incident, rather, waiting to happen. An incident or an accident, depending. Because if it hadn't been Trayvon Martin, it would have been the next group of kids that came around on a rainy night or a dark night, walking through the neighborhood, that wore a hoodie, that didn't wear a hoodie, that wore a baseball cap backwards, whatever, 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 that looked suspicious. Because remember, he'd made numerous calls about kids that looked suspicious, and now he's on guard, and now there's been burglaries, and now his wife is scared, and so burglars running through the backyard. And, I mean, I can understand you being scared. I can also understand, though, somebody who now has a reason, who wants to prove himself, that is on high alert, over alert, okay? Like, too much.
And I wanted to ask you also about the fact that O'Mara keeps mentioning that George Zimmerman has never had a felony conviction. And it's true. He hasn't had a conviction that stuck to his name because he took the diversionary program. He's actually had felony convictions, and the way he kept them off of his record was by taking the diversionary program. You only do that when you're completely convicted and you admit that you were in the wrong. Now they want to say, well, that doesn't count because it didn't go against his name. Actually, it did. It's not his first rodeo, as I've said before. He's been involved with being argumentative with police officers and men in uniform and without. And what do you think about that behavior of not wanting to accept authority in the first place?
Well, I think he has a little bit of a Napoleon complex. I don't know that he's short and that's why, but I just call it that in general. People who want to take over, they want to take charge, they want to show that I'm the big man, macho, whatever it is that he's got, and that's definitely there. So he wants to be kind of the leader of the pack, and that's why he doesn't like authority, and that's why he wants to be a cop, and that's why he's gotten into scuffles or issues or felonies and arguments and been able to keep them off his record until now. So this is why I go back to, he was an incident waiting to happen. He would have eventually cornered some kid or kids that got into that neighborhood, and he would have been ready with the gun, is my opinion. Was he planning to really use that gun and never kill anybody? I don't think so. See, that's where I will not go. I do not see this man as somebody who meant to ever take a human life. The hero he wanted to be was just to be the tough guy. This is how I perceive it. I mean, I can only say it as I see it. So he wanted to be the tough guy, the enforcer, the leader, the all those things, you know, Mr. Protector, Mio Macho. But he was never planning on actually ever harming anyone to the point of murder, certainly not, in my opinion. I think that's where people involved in this whole thing go astray when they talk about there was George Zimmerman waiting with a gun to murder Trayvon Martin. I don't believe. I don't believe that. I believe there was George Zimmerman waiting with a gun looking for anybody who was causing trouble. And if it entailed having to kill somebody to save his own life and stand his ground, he was certainly willing, ready, and able to do that.
And now what do you think that he's already stated? I knew nothing about stand your ground. How's that going to fare now in the court? Because the judge said, I don't agree with you, Mr. O'Mara, on that. The door's been open, and now we're going to have to discuss it. I don't agree with you that it can't come in. How do you think that's going to fare? Do you think it will come in?
It has to come in because the jury has to know that he did know about stand your ground. I think even though that's not the legal premise of the defense, this is not a stand your ground defense, I still think that the issue has now been brought up and the jury doesn't know what that means technically in a court of law. I mean, we've all heard it bandied around, but no one's practically even heard of it before this incident came up. So it has to be sussed out. It has to be fleshed out, if you will, I think. I think it would be very unfair for the jury to only hear him say, I never heard of it, and not know that he was taking courses in it, which detailed it in you know, very specific terms. And also, I think in order to show the mindset of George Zimmerman, you have to know the coursework that he studied, what was involved, that he was familiar with methods of aggression, how to use a gun, how to, you know, deal with an assailant, how to, you know, what is stand your ground, what his rights were as a civilian, quote-unquote, vigilante neighborhood watchman, you know, what were his rights. You know, we all have a right to defend ourselves. It's great. If Trayvon Martin came into Zimmerman's house and broke in through the door, gun or no gun, then George Zimmerman could stand his ground and shoot him, okay? But he didn't. He didn't. He was a kid walking around with some Skittles in the rain. And so I think it's important that the jury understands specifically that George Zimmerman had this knowledge and that he was already hyped up. He was like a ticking time bomb. He was going to explode on somebody because he was upset that his neighborhood was being seized by quote-unquote burglars and creeps and what did he call them, a-holes and blah, blah, and whatever he called all these little punks.
Mm-hmm.
He was upset about it. I can understand him being upset about it. I wouldn't want to live in a neighborhood that I had to constantly fear for my safety, my kids' safety, my wife's safety. He was upset about it, and now he was going to do something about it.
And when he had this tragedy, February 26th, he weighed a particular weight, and he was absolutely in shape. In fact, he was at MMA practice 3 days a week. Trayvon Martin was not in practice. He wasn't training for MMA. And do you think this is deliberate, that they're letting him gain all this weight to look like a roly-poly, that he's so innocent? How could you look at him? How could he possibly fight anyone? Do you think it's like a mistake because he's inside the house that he's gaining weight? Or do you think that they're encouraging this so that he looks less dangerous?
I think that question has been certainly bantered around, and my answer to it is it wouldn't surprise me if George Zimmerman was coached to perhaps gain some weight, because it's not the first time a defendant changes their appearance before they go to trial so as to not appear as violent or aggressive or frightening as they were at the time of the crime. George Zimmerman looks nothing like the 26-year-old who killed Trayvon Martin right now as we sit in court today. He is overweight. He looks older. He's got his clean-shaven face. He no longer has the scruffy beard or whatever he was donning at the time. He's no longer that cool, tough guy. And as you call him, roly-poly is a good way to describe it. I can't imagine this guy is only, you know, what, not even 30 years old. I mean, he looks like a half of a grandpa. I think it's deliberate. I think, or it's a combination of the above, that the guy's been nervous and nerve-wracked. I mean, he is, after all, a target. He has a target on his back. He knows that. He has to walk around with an entourage of lawyers and people to protect him because he has nowhere to turn. So part of his eating is probably because he's just beside himself. But I'm sure that was hasn't hurt in the viewpoint of the defense team. So I mean, I don't want to go so far as to say they told him gain weight or they're encouraging it, but I would say they weren't discouraging it.
Aphrodite, you're in court today. What do you see?
Well, there was a huge argument to try to keep off the stand the professor who taught George Zimmerman about criminal defense, self-defense, criminal procedure, criminal schooling, and they lost. The professor came on the stand, which I thought was so interesting is that the defense would think that this is not relevant, that George Zimmerman studied criminal defense and stand your ground law in college, in a course, that he was trying to be a police officer. That's the other thing that came on the stand, is that he made an application to be a police officer in Virginia and was rejected, that he made an application to also go on a ride-along with the Sanford PD. That was also came into evidence. All of that was something that the defense was trying to keep out of evidence. That was what the big fight was about this morning before trial started. And to me, I wonder, what are they, I mean, I understand a great defense team and they are a good defense team, but isn't that central to the case? I mean, this whole thing is about the fact that this man wanted, was a wannabe cop. And now here's proof. He tried to be a police officer. He got rejected from Virginia. He tried to ride along with the Sanford PD. And this was all happening in the months and years leading right up to killing Trayvon Martin. So it's not like he wanted to be a police 20 years ago. He wanted to be riding along with police 15 years ago. He was taking courses in criminal procedure 15 years ago and forgot all about it. No, no, no. He was about to just graduate with his degree from the criminal school in the Seminole County School with this criminal studies degree or whatever it was that it's called in 2012, right at the time that he killed Trayvon. This to me was a tremendous day for the prosecution so far.
And they, I guess, don't mention that he not only asked to do that ride along, but that he released information later about the fact that the cops had given him private information about how they slept in the cars and the different places where they bought donuts and all of that stuff. In other words, after he did the ride along, he badmouthed the very cop that he did the ride along with.
Yeah,
he did a whole expose.
But that was not brought into court.
Again, you can't unring the bell. That's been in the news since last year.
But the jury's not hearing it.
Right, the jury's not hearing it.
The jury's not aware of that.
No.
The jury will not be aware of that.
But if they heard it a year ago, if they were around town and they heard it, they heard it. It's not private information.
So, again, I like to go by what the jury is hearing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the world, we, the world at large, have a different viewpoint. We have a vantage point because we've been hearing things and seeing things and both sides and one side and whatever for all this time. Now, these people selected on this jury, these six people, they took an oath to not look at media, and they also were selected based upon whether or not how much they knew about this case and whether or not they could be fair. And I know, having sat through a lot of jury selections, that there are people who don't watch the news, don't pay that much attention. And usually those are the ones who get on a jury. So I have to believe that even though this case has been so widely publicized, there are people who don't know such facts as you're saying. You know, so for example, I didn't know that. I'm not from here, so I'm not getting that local flavor of...
Yeah, that was in the news.
George Zimmerman rode around with cops and then badmouthed them because they went and got a donut. Not everyone would know, and I would imagine these jurors don't know. And if they did know, I don't know what the effect that would have.
Well, because he also mentioned the fact that while they were on duty with him and they were driving him around, they told him about how they had gone and run errands while they were on company time.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, and what this goes to is obviously George Zimmerman thought he could be a better cop than any cop was around. He wanted to be the best cop. He wanted to be the better cop. I'm better than you. I rode along with these cops and they were no good. They had donuts. They took breaks. I could be the super cop. That's what he was going for. And that is really relevant because it goes to his state of mind. In, as you said, we talked about yesterday, him wanting to be the hero,
yes.
Him wanting to be the savior, him wanting to be the big dude on the block, Mr. Cool. You know, and one of the things that I found that we didn't get to talk about yesterday is that his best friend is a air marshal.
Yes.
Do you not think that he and his best friend didn't have stories and talks about how cool it was? Who gets to carry a gun on a plane?
Mm-hmm.
Only an air marshal. And how cool is that, that this guy's on a plane and he's going through skirmishes with, and there's situations I'm sure that he's had where there's been tense situations where maybe he's had to apprehend someone on a plane. Whatever those stories are, you don't think that George Zimmerman was chomping at the bit to be like his buddy, who's
yes.
the air marshal, who's Mr. Cool with the gun, and he can get on the plane and deal with whatever forces of evil, and he's going to solve all the world's problems. I mean,
yes.
I really see
yes.
him. This is how I see this man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming through bit by bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the prosecution has had a chance to bring forward people that are substantiating, yes, he took courses in criminology, yes, he wanted to be a police officer, and yes, he rode along with the Sanford PD right before he killed Trayvon Martin.
This is all relevant.
Extremely relevant. I mean, I can't think of anything more relevant. If you people say, oh, he wasn't a vigilante, you know, on the other side of the coin. He was defending himself. He was standing his ground. Blah. You know what? No, he was a vigilante. That's my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah, and the more I'm seeing, the more I'm saying, oh, yes, this is substantiating my thought.
Mm-hmm.
That he's a vigilante.
Yes.
That he's a wannabe cop, and that's how this whole thing happened. And in my opinion, he baited Trayvon if there was an altercation, and I'm not saying there wasn't. Because obviously, there's some kind of scuffle. But I believe that Zimmerman baited Trayvon Martin.
Yes.
Because here's, if you think about it, Trayvon's on the phone with his friend. And who comes up to him? Zimmerman. And says, and Trayvon says, what's your problem? Like, so there's the proof that Zimmerman confronted Trayvon, not the other way around. So he's taken bits and pieces of what really happened and molded it to fit his scenario that will fit a self-defense argument.
And they didn't want to discuss the fact that he had studied self-defense. He most certainly has.
Well, they didn't want to discuss it because they don't want this jury to see the truth about the possibility that this is a wannabe cop who went too far. They don't want that. They want the jury to believe that poor George Zimmerman was fighting for his life because Trayvon Martin, out of nowhere, decided at 17 years old that he's running away from someone in the rain, that all of a sudden he's going to turn around and clobber him and say, you're going to die tonight. And, you know, that Zimmerman had to act because he was in fear for his life.
And one point that I keep stressing that people don't know when they have one language is that in the Caribbean, in any island of the Caribbean, whether they speak Dutch, whether they speak Spanish, English, or French, they say shade, sombra, or sombre, meaning to shade yourself from water or sun. You use the same word, shade. And she kept saying shade. And they, West, when he interviewed her, when he was interrogating her, he didn't understand what shade meant.
Mm-hmm.
But in all Latin countries in the Caribbean, when you say shade, it's standing under something to avoid water or sun.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. And she kept saying shade, and they thought, oh, well, she's uneducated. She doesn't know what she's saying. Yes, she did. That's exactly the expression you use.
So, meaning, what's the point of that?
She kept saying shade, and he kept trying to make it sound as though she was an uneducated person
that
didn't know what it meant.
I see you're just talking on a different point now.
When they were on the phone, Trayvon and the girl,
right,
he kept telling her, I'm trying to find some shade. I have to get under shade. Hide from under the water, which is why he was stepping back by the mailboxes, because that's the only place where there's shade.
And that's where he was, right. He wanted to get out of the rain.
Yes.
That's what that was about.
Yes.
And yes, that did probably look suspicious to George Zimmerman. I can see where he's looking at a kid, walking around in the rain, maybe lurking under
the shade,
right?
Where so he doesn't get wet.
It looks suspicious.
By the mailboxes are the only places where they have shade.
I get that. So that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is everything else that happened after that.
It's not, yeah.
That's the problem.
I also have a problem with where they find the body and where he says his head was being bashed. And I had been saying here in the media room to every other reporter that's here, those two scratches are not cuts. They're not lacerations and not enough to make, in fact, they wouldn't even staple them.
Right. Well, that's the thing. You know, the ME yesterday was a strong witness because she said basically that George Zimmerman's injuries were insignificant, I believe is the word she used.
Minor.
Minor injuries. So he had two minor cuts to his head, and he's bald. So how lightly could his head have even touched the ground when he has no hair, right? And then he had, what? I don't even remember what else he had. He had a little bit of a lump on his head because his head hit the ground.
The day before that, he wanted the physician's assistant to say, and West kept insisting, and so did O'Mara, yes, but he had a broken nose, didn't he? And she wouldn't say it because he didn't, in fact, break his nose. If he had broken his nose, they would be wearing T-shirts with the X-ray on it. There was no broken nose. In fact, I wrote an article about there was no broken nose.
Well, and that's the other thing. I mean, look.
He had a bloody nose and a couple scratches on his head. That was the extent of, you know, I just find it very difficult to believe that that any kid, 17 years old, 20 years old, 14 years old, whatever age you want to say the kid is going to get in a skirmish with a stranger who he's afraid of, and we know that because he's concerned about this stranger because he says, some creepy white cracker or ass cracker is following me.
Mm-hmm.
He's afraid of the guy. He doesn't want to be followed. He's going to go from that and turn around and suddenly get so brave and so much bravado as to say, you're going to die tonight, MF.
Yeah, when he doesn't have a gun, and
yeah.
Zimmerman knows he has a gun.
I mean, and you know, one of the things I want to make a point that I feel is important. When you study self-defense and when you deal with guns,
mm-hmm.
you are taught you're supposed to stay 20 feet away from anybody that's a suspect or somebody that you're concerned about, because that's the amount of time it takes for a bullet to get to that victim or presumed victim or suspect. He didn't stand 20 feet away. He didn't stand 10 feet away. In fact, though, in his recreation, Zimmerman says, I was 8 to 10 feet away. He's already curtailing his story to fit the guidelines of what you're supposed to do if you're armed and you're going up against somebody who is not armed or you don't know if they're armed. Okay? He's supposed to know, as the person, the adult, the protector, that if you're armed and you see someone that you suspect in your area, you call the police and you don't go near that suspect with your gun. You leave that suspect for the police to deal with. What I guess I don't get is, Ruthie, what is so difficult to understand about that? That is what you're taught when you buy a gun, when you train to have a gun. You're taught stay away from people with the gun. And if someone does approach you, as he claims, you say, I'm armed, I have a gun. Stop, I have a gun. Like police say.
Exactly.
You let them know that they could be in lethal danger. You don't start a skirmish.
I agree.
You don't get into a scuffle with your gun.
This is Aphrodite Jones at syndicatednews.net.